Okay, so the first question that we had was, when you're making a photo, like how long do you spend like coming up with a concept, or do you just go to a place and then you're inspired when you get there, or like how much planning goes into the photo?
Well, it goes two ways. One is that I might have an image in mind that I'd like to take that I've imagined, or maybe it's a failed attempt from another time. Maybe it's something that the circumstances there provide as an inspiration, and then I start to think along those lines and I start setting up for it. So there's a kind of a period of time in which that kind of process goes. But then on the other side, you know, going into the image and making the image and realizing the physicalities of it, that it's actually either dangerous or difficult or impossible, or getting in too deep into it, that I have to do something else. And so in the moment it changes. And so I have that kind of and those photographs tend to be the better ones. Meaning the better ones are ones that I have less control over, and the ones that are you know, where I've had the opportunity and the planning and everything else turned out to be either more mundane or dumb or just, you know, kind of silly.
Okay.
By and large, not always.
Okay. Talking about dangerous or, like, you know, painful. Well, okay. I've seen, like, a lot of your photos were, like, really incredible. Like, it wouldn't be something that could have been done, you know, easily. So, like, how much did you go through a lot of pain when you were doing those? Or, like, you know.
Well, it's one of the things I'll briefly touch on this evening, that it's one of the reasons why I don't photograph someone else. Because if you're photographing someone else and you're asking them to do something or to bear with something, I don't see how you could do that. But when you yourself know that, you know, you're at some limit to what might be dangerous or painful or difficult, then you either want it enough and you take the risk, or you say this is impossible. So I know the edge of my pain, and I know the edge of my possibility, and I've learned that. And the problematic side of that is that I like to go to that edge more, because I know it's at that edge where sometimes the really stronger photographs exist, and then you raise expectations. People want to know what was so difficult about that one.
So your photographs are all, you know, with nature, and you're kind of combining your body in nature. So how do you sort of justify going, like, there's a specific photograph of you coming in a house. So how does that, your, like, pictures with nature translate into, like, pictures in a house? It's not nature anymore, it's man-made.
A very interesting question, Allison. I like your photograph, by the way, of your nose.
Oh, yeah. She took
oh,
that.
Oh, you
one.
Took it. I like the photograph.
It's my nose.
Yeah, okay.
And
yeah.
Hair.
And my hair.
Yeah, yeah. And that's in, it seems like an interior. It's maybe the fact that I've been doing what I've been doing for such a long, long time that people have might think that, you know, it's like a broken record, the way we used to say it when we had records. And so it was an attempt to want to see what I could create in a surreal fashion, using an interior in different places. I also started to travel for that reason. I'd make pictures in Paris or pictures in Japan, or I've been working lately in China. And I'm actually searching for new ideas, and, you know, and part of that investigation of going into culture and into timed environments, not timeless environments that nature provides, is a kind of a challenge to try to see if I can come up with new meanings, you know, and invigorate. But it's mostly, I think, for the surreal aspect that it, something like that furnishes, that I gravitated. Maybe I've made my message enough in the one. Not that I've left it. I a lot of work coming back out of China again, and out of Norway especially, that is completely in nature again. So it's just a different, maybe lesser part of the work.
So with your new theme possibly of finding culture and stuff, would you keep yourself in the image, or would you go to something else, you know, start photographing a different subject, a completely
I'm
different...
afraid to do that. I'm afraid to do that because, you know, I have this feeling that and I also feel that I haven't, even though people might say I have, but I haven't exhausted everything. I don't feel I've exhausted everything in what I'm doing. And so the thing that I'm looking for in non-nature, in a way, is to see if I can still surprise myself.
So, going back to travel for a second,
yeah.
I noticed that you were born in Finland.
Yes.
And then moved to the States while you were still young. Did you draw on any of these? I mean, I moved a lot when I was younger, and it was certainly a different experience being somewhere where you didn't have too many connections. Did you draw on that at all when you were photographing early on?
I think perhaps, all the questions have been very interesting, and I appreciate the last two specifically in terms of what I'm going to be, you know, trying to talk about this evening. And this last one especially is because that's exactly... I got an email from a friend of mine in San Francisco this afternoon. I sent him a text that I've written for a new book that's coming out in the spring called Homework. And it's all the photographs that I've made in Finland. And so I've returned to my roots, and I've been photographing there from 1973 to the present, continuously. But I also went back to my childhood, and in this lecture I speak a lot about my deformity and what was a deformity for me as a child that was gravitated and made more profound by my mother. And in the book I write about my mother a lot, and I bring lots of the information that is probably the motivation for the work I do together into that essay, which I sent to my friend in San Francisco, and he wrote back just saying that now I understand you better. You know, what are you trying to do? And I won't be able to read all of that text. It's a fairly lengthy text, but I have some portions of it that you know, when you hear them, you could think to this question of yours, because I do believe, I mean, you know, that for all of the people who want to express something out of their lives to other people, that one of the great places to draw the water from the well is in your own childhood, from your childhood, and more so than from anywhere else. And so my childhood was a Finnish childhood. And I also, I may not get to mention this, but, you know, my memory goes back to my operation. And only recently I've been able to reread, or not reread, but read for the first time, essays and texts that my mother has written. She wrote an autobiography. And I can now read it. And I realize that my memory goes back to 4 months, because that's when my operation was. And I remember everything about the operation. I remember the whole place. And I remember what happened. And so that's filled with pain, and that's filled with some pleasure, but it gives me the sense that I think I know what I'm doing better. And it's odd at 62 years of age to come to some understanding of what maybe you've been doing all your life. So it's a great question.
Alex,
hi.
Thanks for coming, Alex.
Okay, hi.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
So, Alex, if you ask a question, just try to grab the mic from Allison.
Yeah.
I know she's not going to want to surrender it too much, but you need to speak as clearly into the mic as you can. But go ahead, Alex.
Feel weird talking into a microphone. What would you say is, like, the main mood of your photographs and, like, the emotion behind it?
Romantic.
Really, why?
in the sense that, you know, I'm searching for beauty. I'm not saying I'm beautiful in that sense, but I'm searching for a beautiful photograph, a balanced and beautiful composition, water, the elements, nature's gorgeous. And in places where I go, it's fantastic sometimes. And so I'm trying to, like, strive for, I think, for that kind of beauty. And then, you know, coupled with that, otherwise that would be too much. I mean, it would be sacred. I mean, it would be just not the right thing. I try to, you know, inject some horror and some terror into it to give the other side. And in the process, probably come up with the thing that no one can say that they do, which is humor, you know. Because humor comes by mistake. It becomes, you know, it comes not because you try to say, I'm going to make a funny picture, but what you did turned out to be funny. So that's like a net result, but between terror and beauty is what I would hope that be, you know, that somebody might write about that if they were going to write about my work.
So I found that a lot of your pictures had a lot of interesting poses, and I was just wondering if maybe you would have a crew that would, like, you know, people that could also, that would help you shoot the photo.
Mm-hmm. I'm a solo climber. I travel by myself most of the time.
Wow.
I do sometimes work during a period of time when there are workshops, either right after a lecture or something like that. But so it's not that I'm always traveling by myself, or there aren't sometimes people around. But I make the photograph by myself because I don't see the picture. I mean, it's a strange thing. I don't see the picture at all. I've made pictures in the blind. Not that I'm blind that way, but I set up the image, but when I go into the picture, I have no way of knowing. Absolutely no way of knowing. I've never used a video camera. I refuse to do things like that. The only really good thing that has technically has helped me a lot at one period when I was, you know, maybe expanding my work was Polaroid, because Polaroid allowed me to see what I just did sooner. And then after a while, Polaroid, I tried to wean myself away from that so that I'd have the opportunity of shooting up 20 rolls of film in Scandinavia, coming back to the U.S. and processing. Mm. But if there was someone setting it up and looking and making the exposure, I feel it would be their photograph as well. And I'm not against collaboration. It's a good thing. But I don't think I could, in a collaboration, express what I deeply believe well enough. Another nice question for me to prep for the evening.
Well, you said that you consider your work to be in a documentary style. And so I was wondering if you think that any other photographer utilizes the documentary style in the same way that you do, or if there was someone who inspired you, like, specifically to work the way you do.
Maybe that has two answers. The first, the documentary side, is that I think that I do in my photographs, particularly with the digital now coming on board in Photoshop and the opportunities to manipulate, because I do none of that, and I deal with film and I deal with the reality of what's been given to me. I have one picture from China I'll be showing that you could say, if your hair wasn't sticking out from behind the tree, maybe it would be better. But it's sticking out from behind the tree, and so it's in there in the way that a documentary photographer doesn't take anything out. So I don't mess with the material, or I don't mess with the brilliance of the invention when it first came out. It was fantastic. And I begin my lecture talking about that using other people's works. Not photographers that I've been inspired by, but just those who deal with veracity. For inspiration, however, I'm sure that the work of, I'm honored to be in the same lecture platform with him, who was pivotal and crucial to me in the early works, was Ralph Gibson. And the fact that he's coming here next is like you know, and I'll be speaking about Ralph. But it isn't his work that moved me to do my work. It's his work that showed me that it needs to be beautiful. And that's also something for me, really, really a new idea. So thank you for the question on that. But bravo, Alvarez Bravo, is at the top of my little pile. And it's a fairly large pile too. But bravo, and then Josef Sudek, even Ace in a strange way. And Arbus. But it isn't that inspiration has to come, I think, has to come directly out of the thing that you do, but it could be what other people do, painters, for instance, that inspire you and give you kind of this foundation platform to say it's okay to do what you do. Balthus is one of these. Balthus is a very, you know, controversial painter, but he's so honest and he's so clear-minded about what he painted that I get inspired by that to say, all right, I'm going to take this risk. But Gibson, for the visual beauty.
Do you consider photographers who use digital and do use Photoshop it's kind of like a different category? Do you break things up? I mean, what do you think of the digital age that we're in right now?
I like the question. Maybe the example I'll use is Gregory Crutzen, for an example, because I've learned to like his work, and I've learned to like it. And he's someone who doesn't take the picture and just has a crew of lots of people, so lots of things are really different. Backtracking just a bit on that, to say that when I see a photograph that is very touching and moving and believable, and then I find out that actually it wasn't so, that it's actually manipulated and this is really not what happened, am I let down? You bet. I'm really like a heart drops, right? And what Crutzen has done is he's sort of lifted the heart up again, because he's doing it very well. He's doing it the way a good movie does, and the suspension of disbelief becomes possible. And it's a new territory, and the digital and the Photoshop, all that that's the frontier for you. I come out of a different era where I get disappointed when the photograph isn't real. It's something else. It's not the photography that I believe most. But I'm learning to. And I know as a teacher I'm obligated, and I have a responsibility to inspire and say, up with the new, let's do this, let's get some great things going. You know, Loretta Lux and people like that who've, you know, pushed these ideas further out, maybe. And you know, the invention that's possible is fantastic. But it doesn't have the same breath.
So would you say that you'd like black and white, filming in black and white more, or color?
Oh, I love color. I tried it in 1980-81, and I felt naked. And I was like, me, oh gosh, you know, I mean, it's like no clothes on when I was in color. And then when it was black and white, it wasn't me anymore, it was somebody else there. You know, I felt vulnerable. So I would have wanted to do color. Color is really captivating. You'll see one or two color pictures certainly in this lecture, but it sweeps you away. And I could think of many photographers whose color works I love a lot. In Finland, there are a lot of young ones that are doing color, fantastic work.
So when you, like, a lot of your pictures are black and white, why do you choose to film them black and white?
I think it was a default kind of a thing that I grew into, simply because that's what people who did art photography did when I was starting out. It was like, you know, it was before Eggleston, right? I began before Woodman, before names you might know, Sherman and Mapplethorpe and lots of people who who might have become inspirational to me, and because like Cindy Sherman turned to color, I might have done then the same. If I was like 10 years younger, I might have followed somebody like her. But I was in that period where Gibson was doing black and white and Kurtage and Bravo and and I learned to appreciate that. And then my teachers, Callahan and Siskin, right? They were masters in black and white. And so it was like it would be heresy or something. I don't know, it'd be something terrible to even not that among our students there weren't people starting to do color. Color was bubbling up. It was really bubbling up. But I think it's the nakedness that I was afraid of.
Okay.
Why is it that you find it disappointing if a photo doesn't reflect what had happened in reality?
You know, it's interesting because I'm looking at an upside down Man Ray book cover just behind your head there, you know, and and look at Man Ray and what he did and all the images. I really like his work a lot, and invention in black and white and all the, so maybe it's a too strong a statement to say that I don't appreciate an image that's not true or an image that's been fabricated, and it's sort of almost hypocritical because that's what I'm doing, right? You know, in a way, I mean, I'm making something happen that doesn't happen. Charles Harbutt once, you know, he was teaching at MIT when I was there, and I was showing him some of my work, and I don't know if he wanted to even see it really, but we talked a little bit, and he said, you know, the thing with your work is that, you know, I don't see naked people running in the snow in the woods when I go to the woods. So he's that kind of documentary photographer. So I do the thing that, you know, and in some ways, you know, maybe these early images you'll see, they are in some sense the beginning of performance art, in my mind. I mean, I had no real connections to what was going on a few years later, but, you know, to set something up to be photographed is, in a way, not the same thing as looking at an image, you know, when you find out that the kiss from Duaneau was maybe set up outside Hotel de Ville, you know, and that, you know, it's, oh, damn it. It's those images where it pretends to be true and is not that I have more of a problem than those where it's part of the concept, like Funky Berta does, this cosmonaut who landed on the moon and got celebrated in Russia and goes through all ends of, you know, or he creates these fauna, these animals that don't exist. The conceit and the invention and the concept, those are wonderful. Vic Muniz, they really are wonderful. So that's a good question because it clarifies. It's when the picture is given out as if it was true, and the point isn't to figure that out so that it becomes a conceptual, but still, the breath drops. If I was looking in on the photography, I wouldn't be my favorite photographer.
Who would your favorite photographer be?
Bravo.
Would you say that? I'm sorry. I'm gonna go back on my
line. Oh, sure.
Again. Would you say that what would appear to be a tendency to shy away from faces is more in pursuit of what you said on your website, in pursuit of communion with nature, or just towards making the photograph more beautiful or slightly more seamless, or none of the above?
My mother taught me to believe that I was ugly. And I think that had a lot of effect on me as far as, you know, do I put my face in the photograph? More than that, you know, I wanted to identify these as self-portraits. I didn't really intend them to be self-portraits. They are self-portraits. I titled them self-portraits because I want the viewer to know I took it. That's the only reason I titled them self-portraits. That it becomes a self-portrait, even though the face isn't there most of the times, is kind of strange, because it's a self-portrait then about the general human body as belonging to the earth and being part of the earth. And that message built in my mind over time, but I didn't begin there. I didn't go with that, you know, out there photographing first, saying I want to make an equation between human existence and nature. But it turned out that way, and I came to really love that and be enamored of it. So you know, we build our bodies of work. We're not so smart, you know. We get bounced around trying to figure out what we're doing, and later on come to some realizations that we have to accept. Because if I didn't accept that, then I'd say, all right, yeah, I might be successful. People might like the work. People are buying it. But is that what I want to say? And I've learned to. I've come away with the fact that because of my difficulties in childhood, I somehow came around to converting that into an equation between the human body and nature, which is ever more important in this world than it was when I began, even. And I feel it very deeply, and it's actually given me enormous comfort. And by putting the face away, maybe it allowed me to get to there. I forgive my mother in the book. Somebody once said to me, no mother can not love their child. It's not the definition of a mother. But these are things that I think we grow into the meaning of what we do, and I think it could be dangerous or a mistake to say put all that baggage in front of what you're doing and then try to say, all right, I'm going to try to express that. I don't think that would work. I think then it becomes very literal and illustrative. But I think as you allow yourself to do the things you want to do, the journeys you're going to take in creating your lives, you know, whether it's photography or some other form, that I think it eventually comes back to you and who you are. And you don't have to know that or identify that. I once made an analogy about mystery to some student who had been kind of asked by their group of teachers, or they had to explain why they did what they did. You know, come on, let's know what's the motivation behind all this? And she wrote me an email, and I wrote back and said, look, I don't think you have to let people know. I think that you have a right to keep that in. And I made an analogy about a fishing reel, and the line that's in a fishing reel that goes when you throw it out, and then you reel the fish in, you throw it out. And throughout your life, you might have this fishing reel, but never do you ever get to the center of that. You don't need to. You just throw out what you need, you pull it in. And so the idea of remaining a mystery, even to yourself, I think is a smart idea. I don't want to know myself completely.
So, beside, like, as a photographer, what else do you do, would you say?
I write.
About?
About photography. I write some introductions for other photographers' books. I'm a professor, so I teach. I've curated some exhibitions, so I gather works together and do projects like that. I'm on a sabbatical next semester, and I'll be attempting to write a screenplay. I like to ski.
Screenplay, though?
Yeah.
If you promise not to tell anyone.
Okay.
called The Scream of the Madonna. And it's about the two Eduard Munch paintings that were stolen. And they were put together in the film. See, it goes immediately to fiction. But they lived together for 2 years, The Scream and the Madonna. The Scream is the deformed. You could see the parallel immediately. Right? The deformed person bound together with this beautiful woman. And it's their adventure until they're rescued and found. In a kind of broad way, it's what it's about. It may evolve into something else, but that's where it started. How about questions to you? Can we do that too? What's the best thing about photography?
Me?
Yeah, or maybe for everyone, because I think you can each have a different. I'm sure you have a different answer.
Well, I kind of studied you, I really never thought in the way like you kind of did, mm-hmm. And like this. I guess in a way, like, you made me, like, I guess in the past, when I go out shooting, I would just shoot a lot of pictures that kind of, like, you know, look good or is, you know, typically interesting. But now, like, I guess when I go with the camera, I think of more than what's just, like, what I see in front of me, but I actually think of, like, the meaning mm-hmm. a lot more deeper.
This is in the moment that you're making the photograph, or after you process or look at it?
The moment that I'm making it, like taking the picture.
I would also encourage after you take it, mm-hmm. you know. I mean, as an example, I made a picture in China I'll be showing. It's called Waiting for the Snake. And it's the title that makes the picture. I don't think the picture's necessarily any good or that good. But the meaning comes out of the image because it was a place where there were snakes. Right, and the waiting for, so that the meaning comes out of, and that can happen in photography, I think. Allison?
I think why I'm drawn to photography is I like to capture a moment, even if it's not just a snapshot of people, if it's mm-hmm. just a scene. Unlike film, where you see the before and the after of every scene, and you have the plot laid out in front of you, with a photo, you don't know what's going on. So whether it's real or fake, you still make up the story behind the photo. And that's kind of what I like to look for in others' photos and in my own photos.
Nice, yeah. Do you feel that when you see a photograph, I'll be showing one in Aceh, looking down a sort of an empty street towards the Pantheon in Paris. And do you, like, if when you see the picture, you can ask yourself this question, do you ever step inside photographs, physically?
Yeah, it depends on the photo, but I do, especially yeah. if you don't see the whole person in the photo, like
yeah.
yours, so I mean, if you don't have a face in the photo, you can put your own face in the photo, you can put your own
well, that's nice.
Mind and body in, so yeah. then you become a part of the photo.
Well, that's nice, yeah. Huh.
I think I'm drawn to it because I'm more of a writer than a photographer. I write pretty much constantly, and sometimes when I'm writing, there will be a mood or even just like a color that I can't get across in words, and I always find that inexpressibly frustrating if I just can't without the visual aspect to it, because sometimes there aren't words for a specific shade of blue.
Especially if it's shifting to another shade of blue. Yeah.
Yeah, and so I guess I like having another way to express those things.
Well, that's nice. Do you ever like write about a single photograph? Do you use a photograph or inspiration that way?
Yes and no. I have a number of short stories that I based on photographs, but mm-hmm. it was more the idea that I was going for than the photograph itself.
Okay. Sometimes I give that exercise to my students. You know, to help them with, you know, visual understanding of images. It's just an exercise to take a photograph and give me a paragraph. Stay in the photograph. Don't come outside the frame. Just stay right there. And that's interesting. Yeah. Valerie?
I think for me, what I like best about photos is kind of the relationship with the truth, and that I always think that the most beautiful ones are the ones that are the most true, even if, but then the definition of truth changes too. When is it true for who is it true, and is it true for the photographer, even if he makes it a certain way that it wouldn't necessarily be true in real life, or.
No, that whole topic is really interesting, because I mean, maybe the truth of a Gregory Crutzen scene is that's the feeling. The truth is the feeling. The truth is the mood. And when you go there and just shoot this scene without doing any of the things that he does, it's nothing. Nobody looks at anything. And so, if you want to get to the truth of the emotion, you know, the truth of the feeling, maybe you do have to push aside some other things that are not so vital. It is fascinating. I mean, the jury is certainly out.
Well, I think my reasoning's kind of two-sided. I have a carnal appreciation for taking photos.
Mm-hmm.
Not wantonly, but I enjoy the process. And then I stray from documentary principles in manipulation a little bit, because I also enjoy seeing what I can bring out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Just, not really changing elements within it, but heightening characteristics, just basic mechanics like contrast and things.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it may be another analogy here, because it's sort of the theme has been about this question of truthfulness, and you know, you could say maybe with the writing aspect here and what you're describing there is maybe we're with digital and with manipulation, we're closer to a kind of visual poetry. I mean, a poet is given all kinds of freedom to manipulate the scenario and the words and put things together in a way that really works. And recall just certain things and not everything, and discard lots of stuff. You know, that when we create truths that are semi-fiction and semi-documentary, maybe we get closer to poetry. You know, a different kind of poetry. Because a documentary photographer would argue, no, nothing's more poetic than a fact. Which is, I forget now, is that Whitman or somebody made that comment, but you know, a fact well told is the most poetic thing that we know. But the other aspect of truth and is that I don't think we're as smart as reality. I think reality and serendipity play a much greater role in creating opportunities and things to happen than we could imagine. And the problem with most of digital imagery, that at least that the magazines and the general public hype is about, is to manipulate images that we already have seen. You know, to make images using formula that people assume that's what digital should be about. And that's where I think the frontier is for students in my classes. Invent the new form, bring something new out of this experience, in the way Baudelaire, you know, wanted. You'll see a picture of him. I have a staring contest with Baudelaire in this lecture. Where when the invention first came out, he just said to photographers, don't become painters. You know, find out what this medium is about. And maybe that's what we're still doing when we're manipulating. Anything else? Thank you for your answers. Also, thank you and for the whole thank you for the whole experience of this is a great way of learning about what's important to students and hopefully for students to find different perspectives. I'm sure everyone brings a different perspective. that way. So thank you all.